is Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story, behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guest, and our guest, is Dr. Yazbek there? I guess not. So we're going to just talk about the meaning of the elections. Now, certainly the fact that the Democrats picked up 28 seats, I mean, I'm not in the least bit surprised. But people have to understand that everything is rigged, everything is planned ahead of time, everything is manipulated. There is an invisible government that controls what we think and how the majority of the American people act. Is Dr. Yazbek there?
Yes.
Oh, Dr. Yazbek, okay. Let me just finish my introductory remarks, and then we'll get right with you. But I think you have to understand, for instance, Bob Woodward's book that came out, going into the back, the state of denial, the fact that the Bush administration had made so many serious mistakes. And then, of course, the book by David Cole that talked about how the Bush administration was using the religious right. And then the Ted Haggart's scandal, it was time to go over this election, what was going on over in Iraq, and of course much of this, much of the unrest there, much of the violence I think is actually probably being created there intentionally, and what they wanted was create such a situation that people were voting against the war. They were not voting against moral standards, limiting government, the things that the Republican Party is supposed to stand for. Unfortunately, it doesn't, because certainly with the current leadership, George Bush was put in there to totally discredit not only the Republican movement and the conservative movement, because he's neither a Republican nor a conservative, but also Christianity, and I think he's doing a great job of doing that. And I think that the defeat was not for the beliefs that you and I hold of limiting government and limiting spending and a nation where people can be free and where moral values are strong. The election was all about the war and about the corruption in Washington, D.C. at the highest levels of government, and Donald Rumsfeld, and of course about the fact that the Republicans have been covering up about Mark Foley. That was what people were voting on yesterday. We were manipulated into it. Things are going to be better. I don't think so. I think the war is going to continue. I think the Democrats are going to continue supporting the war, where they may pull a few troops out, but nothing really is going to change. Other than perhaps there'll be some gridlock in Washington, D.C., and hopefully they won't be able to advance their agenda quite as rapidly. Let's just hope and pray that we've bought some time so we can educate the American people. That's all we can hope and pray for. Well, with that as the background, we have with us Dr. Yazbek, and we're going to be talking about vaccinations and the problems of autism. Dr. Yazbek, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Why don't you sort of pick up the story and tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a pediatrician, and I stopped active pediatric practice about 10 years ago, and I'm just doing some research into vaccinations in general, vaccines and autism in particular, and there is obviously such a connection, but essentially tonight I thought I'd just talk about this new idea of vaccinating young infants against the influenza, the flu, infants as young as 6 months to 23 months, to those that are always at home or at the babysitter or somewhere, or not out and around, and also discussing the pros and cons of such vaccination. And now, some of those vaccines, as you well know, used to contain thimerosal. Now there are some influenza vaccines that are thimerosal-free, but the idea is forgetting about the thimerosal, because obviously I don't want children to be exposed to thimerosal, but let us talk about the influenza vaccine itself.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Right here.
Yes, there is a choice, a real alternative, when it comes to news and information. The GCN Radio Network has become a world leader for those who want to know the truth. Visit GCNLive.com today and discover the amazing benefit of becoming a subscriber to the GCNLive.com Radio Club. By becoming a monthly subscriber, you gain access to higher quality audio streams of all of the compelling GCN broadcasts. A full archive of the shows are posted on a daily basis within 3 hours, so you can listen to what you want, when you want, fast forward, rewind, pause, and at the same time, you are supporting a beacon of free speech. Visit GCNLive.com and become a member. It's so easy. There's a choice. There is an alternative, and it's called GCNLive.com. Visit GCNLive.com today. You can also get the entire month of your favorite show on MP3 CD that plays on computers and most CD and DVD players for only $19.95. Go to GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, 2 Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of 2 Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA, 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest, Dr. Yazbek, we're going to be talking about the influenza vaccine, independent of the fact that it contains doses of mercury. But you go right ahead, Dr. Yazbek.
Exactly, and just for the benefit of your listeners, is that all of what I would be talking about is also on the at www.jabs.org.uk. And so this particular article is Flu Vaccine Safety Creating a Myth. There are several others that I have written on that website that are available, very visible on the homepage. And then a wonderful three-piece presentation on mercury by John Stern, and also a wonderful paper on human papillomavirus vaccine, that new vaccine, by Suzanne Nelson, on the, all available on that first page. Anyway, going back, in beginning with the 2003 and 2004 influenza season, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices expanded the vaccine for children program to include an annual influenza vaccine shot for children 6 to 23 months of age. It was just a kind of a gentle recommendation, almost like a trial, maybe wanting to see how things happen, but it just gave an opportunity for people who were uninsured or on Medicaid to receive their vaccine for free. So that was our kids' first exposure to influenza vaccination at such a young age. Before that, we vaccinated children who were at high risk, those with congenital heart, asthma, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, and so on. Now, these were now normal children, healthy children, that were vaccinated starting with that season. Now, following season, which is 2004-2005, they replaced the encouragement with an actual recommendation. So now there was a recommendation to vaccinate children. Now, just maybe 10, 15 days ago, we had the very first article of its kind. It was published in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, written by Cambridge, Glantz, and others, and it talked about the safety of the trivalent inactivated influenza vaccine in children 6 to 23 months old. Now, we do not administer the live virus vaccine, the intranasal vaccine, to children under 5. Therefore, the only vaccine available for infants 6 to 23 months old is the injectable type, the old-fashioned one that we have all used. But in a smaller dose, we give them a quarter of a cc instead of half a cc per dose, and we give them a second dose a month later, the very first time, in other words, the very first year. Following that, it was just half a cc until they are 3 years old, and it's a quarter of a cc per dose until they are 3 years old, and they get half a cc. Well, anyway, this group of physicians are from several HMOs on the West Coast and from the CDC. Four of the co-authors were actually CDC employees, so this was kind of strange that there was the CDC doing study on the safety of the vaccine that they were recommending to people. Unfortunately, we could not get to, nobody can get, actually not myself, but anyone else could get to, well, that data is stored with something is called the Vaccine Safety Data Link, because of, on the pretext of confidentiality, nobody can get to see those numbers. So whatever these people tell you is what you have to believe, and they said that they did look at what's so-called significant medically attended events from 1991, January 1, 1991, to May 31, 2003. And they found that there were really no big problems. There wasn't a single serious reaction, and everything was okay, and they reviewed a lot of patients, a lot of charts. Now, notice that they stopped looking the year that we started actually vaccinating healthy children, which is 2003. They stopped on May 31, 2003, and we started vaccinating those children on welfare that fall, the fall of 2003. This intrigued me when I looked at that. I said, well, why would they stop here? Why didn't they go on? They have all of those things on computer. They could have continued to examine the patient. Neither here nor there, they did not. And that's what prompted me to do this research. They said that they looked at 45,356 children in their database who had received 69,359 vaccinations, and that in the largest population-based study to date of that vaccine, there were very few medically attended events, none of which were serious, associated with the vaccination. And so they said that this was an additional evidence supporting the safety of universally immunizing children, infants. Additional evidence meaning that there were other studies before. Well, indeed, there was no study before. There was a single study before that said that the vaccine was safe at that age. As a matter of fact, a study by a very large group in England called the Cochrane Collaboration in the British Medical Journal in 2005 said that they could not even get data about safety of the vaccine. Because they were hard to get. But neither here nor there, that same group republished this year, in January 2006. So before this paper saying that the vaccine was safe, this paper published a big review. Now, these people are from Oxford University, the Institute of Health Sciences. They looked at 34 reports containing safety outcomes. But 22 of these 34 reports included live vaccines, so obviously those are of no interest to us because the kids, the babies don't get them. 8 had inactivated vaccines. these people, and this is, and talk about a big review. Now, this is a world international review saying that the variability in design of the studies and presentation was such that meta-analysis of safety outcome data was not feasible. So those people from Oxford University said that they could not come to the conclusion that the safety was of the vaccine was feasible. They could not prove that the vaccine was safe. So I don't know what this other study was saying by saying that they were supporting previously found data about safety. So what I did is that I went and looked at my favorite subject, as you know, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And I said, well, let me look at what's happening now, just to remind you, remind the listeners, that only a small percentage of U.S. physicians report regularly vaccine adverse events to VAERS. And we have to understand that the fact that somebody has reported a reaction does not mean that the vaccine caused the reaction. So we're all very aware of this, and so am I. I mean, I don't want to say that everything that's reported to VAERS means that the vaccine caused the event. It could have been many other things that caused the event, but it's still, VAERS has been used, VAERS has been, you know, produced and put in action by the CDC and the FDA so that they can find problems. This is what it's really a wonderful and probably the best post-marketing safety surveillance program in the world. And the CDC has used it. For example, it has used it when the rotavirus vaccine created some intussusception and caused some death. They withdrew the vaccine after they saw all those reports. They saw it when they saw the oral polio vaccine causing vaccine-induced paralytic polio. They stopped the oral polio vaccine, and now we use the injectable vaccine. So the CDC has used the VAERS report and efficiently, and the thing was produced to do that. So I went to VAERS and I searched for children what happened after vaccination with the flu vaccine in children who were 5 months to 1.9 years, because they go by years in decimal points. And I said 5 months because sometimes the six-month visit is done really a few days before the 6 months. Therefore, technically, it's called 5 months. So a child could possibly receive that flu vaccine at 5 months and 28 days instead of 6 months and would be included under 5 months. So what did I find? Now, about medically attended events, I found that there were 446 reports to VAERS. 82 reports were filed before 2003. So 82 reports from 1990 to 2003, that's an average of 6 reports per year. 275 reports were filed after October 2004. So that's about 140 reports per year. That's an increase of 2,000%, over 2,000%, after we started vaccinating the children. So that's ER visits. Are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm fascinated by what you're saying, Dr. Yasbeck.
Yeah. And then there were 91 hospitalizations during that period. 91 hospitalizations in all. 33 of them were before the year 2004. And then there were 58 in the last 2 years. So there was an increase of 1,000% almost per year when you count them. So suddenly, since we started giving the vaccine more frequently to children, first as a suggestion and later as a recommendation, our reports of emergency room visits and hospitalizations increased suddenly. Now, when you consider that, as I said, there were 275 reports after October 2004, and of these there were 58 hospitalizations, that's a ratio of almost 1 in 5. 58 out of 275 were admitted. Therefore, the reactions were quite severe, so that not only did they go to the ER, but they actually got admitted to the hospital.
You hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a few moments with Dr. Yasbeck to explore this this program, which I fear is going to harm an awful lot of children.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack for only $99 or a four-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
The United States seems to be celebrating over its triumph of reducing government debt. But the truth be told, public and private debt increased to a record high in 1999, reaching a peak of $14.8 trillion, marking 10.57% annual increase, outpacing its previous 10 years. The U.S. economy receives its currency by taking on debt through a private banking institution called the Federal Reserve System. In the year 2000, debt growth collapsed to only 4.5%. It's bad enough that the U.S. citizens is bound by debt in order to have commerce. However, shocking the economy with a reduction of this magnitude could wipe out years of growth in a stock portfolio. Before you make your next investment decision, get the cold hard facts. Call 1-800-686-2237 for your free report on the outstanding level of public and private debt. You must understand how recession and depression are driven by outstanding debt. Call 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Hello, this is Amy Bjorklund. Thanks to a quantum leap in garlic research, the health benefits of 20 fresh garlic cloves are now available in one tiny capsule. With stabilized allicin, the proven power of garlic has been transformed into what is perhaps the most important medicinal product ever developed, and there's no odor. Stabilized allicin gives you and your family a safe, natural weapon that kills harmful bacteria, viruses, and funguses, all without harming the friendly bacteria in the digestive tract. This means strong immunity, fewer and shorter colds, and the best possible protection from deadly diseases, none of which prescription drugs can offer. What's more, this product can deter mosquitoes from biting you and safely keep fleas and ticks off your pets. Visit truthandexcellence.com, click the Truth and Excellence banner on GCNlive.com, or call me, Amy Bjorklund, personally at 805-595-2711. 805-595-2711.
Dan back here, and we're talking with Dr. Yazbek, and we're talking about the influenza vaccine. And Dr. Yazbek is saying that the CDC got some of their people to come up with a report based upon statistical information that nobody can see or check out. Now, that, of course, how can you possibly publish things? Because how do you know whether they're being honest or not? Well, they're from the CDC. Well, I will tell you that I've been to the CDC. I spent about 3 days there back in the late 1980s. And I went back there to talk to them about the AIDS epidemic, and it didn't take me very long to realize that they had no intention of stopping the AIDS epidemic in America. They have killed, because of their public health policies, well over 500,000 people in this country, and, of course, another million to a million and a half infected. And those policies carried out throughout the rest of the world are responsible for an unnecessary epidemic that killed tens of millions of people and has infected another 50 or million or more, and they're all going to die in Botswana. 46% of the pregnant women have been tested for HIV positive, and they're all going to die. That is the end result of a public health policy. And, of course, here in America, they've told people, well, just go ahead, do whatever you want to as long as you protect yourself, use prophylactic, a condom. We have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Would you really want to hire people like that to protect your public health? And they're telling us that the influenza vaccine is just fine. Dr. Yazbek's pointing out that as he goes over the VAERS report, which is the reports of vaccine safety and vaccine reactions, why a dramatic increase in vaccine reactions since the new CDC program, which they claim is perfectly safe, and they want to do this because they want you to have your child vaccinated for influenza. And I'm going to let him go ahead and tell the rest of the story, and then I hope he'll tell us, do we have any evidence that it does any good? Well, certainly there's a lot of evidence suggests it does harm.
We'll get to that.
Okay, go right ahead.
We'll get to that. Well, the third item was death. I looked at the death reported to VAERS, and there were 16 deaths. There was one death in 1994, shortly after vaccination, one in 1998. And again, I want to repeat that the fact that the child died does not mean that the vaccine was the cause of the death. But that, these are the reports. We're talking about reports now. So one in 1994, one in 1998, then there were four in 2003, and that is the year where there was the earliest, the first recommendation. There were four in 2004, 2005. There were six last season, 2005, 2006, when there was, more encouragement, encouraging everybody, telling the people, we have the vaccine, go to the doctors, take your children, protect your children, the children are going to die from the influenza and so on. So, looking at those deaths, 5 of the 10 infants who died shortly after influenza vaccination during the last 2 seasons, 5 of those children have received the flu vaccine alone. The interval between the vaccination and the death in those 5 children were 1 day, 2 days, 6 days, and 13 days. The interval between vaccination and death in the remaining 5 children who had also received other vaccines were 1 day, 2 days, 1 day, 7 days, and 5 days. So within the longest waiting was 13 days between vaccine and demise in those reports. And again, just we're talking about the reports. 7 of the 10 infants were males, and only 3 had pre-existing conditions. So before 2003, only 3 of those 10 kids who died would have been candidates to receive the vaccine. The other 7 who were perfectly healthy did not need the vaccine before 2003, but suddenly needed it after 2003. Now, the question is, well, whether the vaccine is safe or is not safe, is the vaccine effective? What is the efficacy of the vaccine? Well, the first study on efficacy, interestingly enough, was reported before we started giving the vaccine to infants. It was a Japanese study, very well done, by a fellow called Maeda and Shintani, two guys, who published an article which the title of which was Failure of Inactivated Influenza A Vaccine to Protect Healthy Children Aged 6 to 24 Months. Exactly what we would want to know before we embark on such thing. Does the vaccine work, or does the vaccine, or is the vaccine useless? This was published in a prestigious journal, which is the International Journal of Pediatrics. And they went and looked, they compared children from that age group during 3 flu seasons, the 2000, the fall of 2000, the fall of 2001, actually in Japan, it's the year 2001-2002. So over 3 seasons, 3 cycles, they looked at infection rate between the vaccinated people and the non-vaccinated kids.
And we're going to have to tell our listeners what they found when we get back here
at
Genesis. Hold on, please.
If you would like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today. Or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Hey, want to know a natural healing treatment that's been around for thousands of years? Salt products. Now Soleil Wellness brings these natural healing products to your home. Easy to use, non-toxic, and 100% natural, these products help to give you great physical, mental, and spiritual results. Heated salt pills for earaches and back pain, salt pipes to relieve respiratory ailments, bath salts release toxins as they soften and rehydrate the skin, pretty salt lamps to ionize the air and reduce EMF radiation. So many different salt products available for you. It's time to let the secret out. Visit Soleil Wellness at natural-salt-lamps.com. That's natural-salt-lamps.com. Or call 312-224-2710. That's 312-224-2710. Mention GCN Live for a free gift.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
The Japanese have used magnetic therapy for thousands of years, and it's more popular today than ever before. Established in 2000, Arizona Unipole Magnetics, AUM, is the number one online source for the superb Dr. Philpott-approved Polar Power Magnetics. Now offering a complete line of these fine magnetics in an easy-to-read mail-order catalog. No hyped-up product descriptions to waste your time, just the facts. Unique polar-powered magnetics are designed to apply only the negative magnetic field to the body, and they're the only magnetics used in Dr. Philpott's research. Proven safe with over 23 years of documented research, now GCN listeners can order the polar-powered ceramic block biomagnet and get a discount. This is the workhorse of all biomagnets. Just mention GCN when you place your order. Visit azunimags.com. That's A-Z-U-N, as in North, I-M-A-G-S.com. Or call toll-free to order and request a catalog. 888-442-0449. That's 888-442-0449.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest today is certainly talking about Well, go right ahead, Dr. Yazbek. You were telling us about the influenza vaccine.
Japanese studies, the Japanese study looked at three seasons, 2001-2002. So before we started routinely vaccinating children in Japan, compared two large groups and found that the attack rates of influenza A between the two groups were not significantly different. And they concluded very clearly that inactivated influenza vaccine did not reduce the attack rate of influenza A infection in 6 to 24 months old children.
Well, if it doesn't do any good, then why are we giving it?
Well, exactly. That was one study, and that was before we even started. But more important is that after we started, again, the Cochrane Collaboration Group at Oxford University, big, huge study, where they really collected everything that was written on vaccination. And they reviewed 51 studies involving 263,987 children. They also looked at 17 translated Russian papers. And they analyzed the findings of 14 randomized controlled trials and 11 cohort studies in order to evaluate the efficacy of the vaccine. The findings were published in their Cochrane database on January 25 of this year, 2006, the conclusion was that in children under 2, the efficacy of inactivated vaccine was similar to placebo. So that is the vaccine that we give to those infants, that inactivated vaccine, age 6. We give it to our children, 6 to 24, 23 months old.
But of course,
and our vaccine, again, not only do we have the problem with the vaccine that is not efficient, but that does not work, but we're also, in many cases, giving the children some mercury in the vaccine because the authorities or the people or the doctors or the available supply of preservative-free vaccine is not available. Therefore, we have to use the vaccine with mercury. And that is really atrocious. I mean, in your own state of California right now, there's a whole, situation where maybe we should give the vaccine. We have to save all those children who need the influenza vaccine, so maybe we should give them the vaccine, even if it contains a little mercury. After all, what's a little mercury? And it does not stop there, and you will be surprised that probably the biggest news about influenza vaccination was published on October 28, 2006, in the British Medical Journal. Again, it was the Cochrane database, the Cochrane collaboration, and I don't think I've heard it on our radios and our TVs, and they publish everything. I mean, here, if they're pushing a vaccine, it's in every news item. But the same group, again, Tom Jefferson and his colleagues from the Cochrane collaboration now reviewed the vaccine use in general for all age groups. And their report was even more intriguing. And I will read it like this. I do not make any mistakes because this is serious stuff. They said that the public policy worldwide recommends the use of inactivated influenza vaccines to prevent seasonal outbreaks. Because viral circulation and antigenic match vary each year and non-randomized studies predominate, systematic review of large data sets from several decades provide the best information on vaccine performance. Evidence from systematic reviews showed that inactivated vaccines have little or no effect on the effects measured. Most studies are of poor methodological quality and the impact of confounders is high. Little comparative evidence exists on the safety of these vaccines. Reasons for the current gap between policy and evidence are unclear, but given the huge resources involved, a re-evaluation should be urgently undertaken. I would think so if you're going to buy 110 million doses of vaccine. The optimistic and confident tone of some predictions of viral circulation and of the impact of inactivated vaccines, which are at odds with the evidence, is striking. And then he adds a personal note about the guy who organized the Cochrane collaboration. He said, whatever the reasons, it is sobering thought that Archie Cochrane's 1972 statement that we should use what has been tested and found to reach its objectives, as is revolutionary now as it was then.
Well, what a tragic situation we're in.
You haven't heard about it. I mean, nobody has heard about it.
No, of course not.
I presume that this may be the first radio program that talks about this study that was published in the British Medical Journal.
Well,
on the same day, the editor of the British Medical Journal, Fiona Godley, wrote, as if to prove the point, we published this week a broadside based on a systematic review of the literature about the lack of evidence for influenza vaccine. This is the editor of the British Medical Journal. So this is the story. It's not, and we had similar study here by Lone Simonson of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, published in 2005, in which she said that she looked at 33 seasons in which, and you know, those 33 seasons, every year we vaccinate more and more older people, the senior citizens. There are increased vaccination rates year after year after year. Yet she looked at 33 seasons, and she saw that the mortality rate had remained the same, about 10% of that whole group. So as if the mortality rate had not decreased with the increase in vaccination rates. And she then proposed that as long as the vaccine is not working to prevent mortality among the old people, maybe we should vaccinate children and vaccinate everybody else so that we can protect the elderly indirectly. and it becomes really a confusing picture when we start thinking that we can vaccinate a little infant that's 6 months old just because he happens to be available and coming to a pediatrician. As a matter of fact, that was stated in one of the publications that they were accessible. The infants were accessible. You know, they're being brought to the bay, to the doctors. They're going to get a DTAP, and they're going to get a HIP. They're going to get a polio and a hepatitis B. Maybe we should also give them a flu vaccine while we have them here. And that is what is happening. And we have added a new whole group of people who are vaccinated, who don't seem to be needing to be vaccinated, very much like as we talked in a previous discussion about the hepatitis B vaccine that we give to infants whose mothers do not have hepatitis B, and the children are in no danger of acquiring hepatitis B, neither acute or chronic. And we give them a vaccine at birth. We give them three other vaccines at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. And then we are hoping that these are going to protect them when they become adults and start having risky behaviors, when we know very well that those antibodies do not last more than 10 years. So that's the story. We are giving babies vaccines just because they are available. And this was stated frankly by many people who pushed this program. The kid is available. They are an available audience.
Well, let's give that website again where people can get your article that you wrote.
It's www.jabs.org.uk. Jabs is J-A-B-S.
Like jabbing with a needle.
Like a jab, yeah. The English call it jab. Shots, you know, they call it shots. They call them a jab.
Why are you going to publish this work in one of the journals at all? Or do you think you could get this paper?
Nobody would touch it.
Nobody would touch it.
I had so many articles on red flags, as you well know, I wrote about two articles a month, but nobody, I wouldn't dream to even present them. They'll laugh at me. They will not touch them. I mean,
The American people deserve to know the truth and need to understand that they are not simply not protecting our children, they're harming our children, and there's some people who know exactly what they're doing, and when people publish articles and then won't let you see the source of their documentation, you know they're hiding something.
We started a whole new situation, and then the fuss about whether there are, we have 10 states now that said we have to eliminate mercury completely. And just after that was passed, there are all kinds of, presentations and demands saying, well, we cannot obtain the mercury-free influenza vaccine for those infants. Therefore, please allow us to give them the one with mercury. But in fact, there is plenty of mercury-free vaccine. But you see what happens. Last year, by the way, we had a surplus of mercury-free vaccine at the end of the season. Now, if you have a surplus again this year, if we don't use the mercury-free vaccine we have, the one without preservative, then the company will not make as much next year. On the other side, if we really use all the mercury-free vaccine that's available, and we run out of mercury-free vaccine, really run out, then the company will produce more of it next year because they are smart enough to say, well, we'll do what the market will fabricate, we will make, we will produce what the market wants. They don't care. It's very easy for them to make it. The difference in price is $2 or $3. They say the added cost. It is $2 or $3. When you think that I can buy today a shot of preservative-free influenza vaccine for infants, the quarter cc in the syringe, for $15.95 in boxes of 10, so I have to pay $159. 100 for a box of 10. Now, you know that one injection of Prevnar is about $54, $55. One injection of chickenpox vaccine is $50. So this is actually, when you think about it, this is one third of the price, and they say it's expensive. And the difference between the one, when you think about it, if you have to buy the vial, you have to buy the syringe, you have to buy have somebody to take it out and give it and so on. The difference in price of $2 or $3 per dose is ridiculous when we're spending millions of dollars giving vaccines around. It is ridiculous to talk that this is expensive or that it's not available, because it's not true. And as a matter of fact, earlier this season when we started pre-ordering, you know, we pre-ordered the flu vaccine in the spring, February and March and so on, way before the spring. People had pre-ordered, and the only vaccine that was available for pre-ordering was the mercury-free vaccine. And yet they come out and tell you, well, it's not available, let's give the kids the vaccine with mercury. And give them a vaccine that now it appears is not any better than placebo, and maybe causing problems.
Well, I have no question that causes problems. All the evidence suggests that, the vaccines that contain mercury cause problems. The vaccines we're giving to pregnant women cause problems when they have mercury in them. And they know that. The question is, why do they insist on doing it, and why are they concealing the truth from the American people? And why can't Dr. Yazbek get his articles published in peer-reviewed medical journals? What about the American Journal of Physicians and Surgeons, the APS?
Well, they have published several of our articles, as a matter of fact, in June of this year, and that's a wonderful article for your listeners to read. It's www.jpands, so JPANDS, jpands.org, and go to the June 2006 edition. And the lead article is an article by Dr. Ayub and myself about vaccinating pregnant women during all three trimesters of pregnancy. And absolutely ridiculous. It's just absolutely crazy to give a pregnant woman a vaccine that she does not need. The recommendation was based on studies from the South on a limited population. It's not representative of the rest of the United States. But now we are telling the obstetricians to give them vaccines, and we are going to have problems. And I can tell you, that article is well worth reading. The lead author is Ayub, A-Y-O-U-B. The article is in the June 2006 edition of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and it's www.jpands.org.
Well, I think that certainly we had Dr. Ayub at our yearly conference last year. We made a video of that talk he gives on.
Wonderful.
And if you're ever interested, it would be glad to send you what he really is. And everyone out there in the listening audience needs to get the video of Dr. Ayub talking about the danger of giving pregnant women this, and what the animal studies show, how that you not only get increased abortions when you give pregnant women a mercury-containing vaccine, at least in the animals, but it interferes with fertility, not only in the next generation but in subsequent generations. That to me was so frightening, especially when we're going to be giving these mercury-laden vaccines to all the children in third world countries, thanks to Bill Gates and Warren Buffett.
Well, talking about the mercury in mercury vaccines and the influenza vaccine during pregnancy, the product circular, the insert that you find that comes with the influenza vaccine tells you that it's not recommended during pregnancy unless specifically ordered by your doctor. So the vaccine maker is kind of covering himself, telling you, well, you ask your doctor if you really want it, because it's not really recommended during pregnancy. And we mentioned that in the article.
And I think that they know very well that it increases the incidence of abortions, And, of course, these animal studies suggest that it increases fertility in future generations, generations yet unborn. Why would anybody want to give something to our pregnant women in the first trimester that could possibly harm the child in their womb?
Exactly. I mean, we tell them not to be with anybody who is smoking a cigarette. We tell them not to drink a glass of wine during the whole pregnancy. We tell them not to eat a tuna fish sandwich because it has mercury. And then we proceed to give them a vaccine that, one, does not work. I mean, now that this is published in the BMJ as of October 28, it does not work. Two, it may have side effects. Three, it contains mercury. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, we tell these women don't travel for a long time, don't do anything strenuous, don't be careful, eat right, drink right, exercise right, and then we go and shoot them with the vaccine.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to get you back on our other programs, Dr. Yasmin.
Thank you
very much. That is a wonderful, wonderful and very informative program. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video Sheltering in Place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at murkywater.com.
Sometimes you feel like you're just a number. To the banks, the credit card companies, the lenders, and financial institutions, you are just a number. Your credit score. And unless that number is above their standards, you get stuck paying more for everything. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. If you don't have perfect credit, banks will either take advantage of you or slam the door in your face. But I want to send you a free tape that shows you how my proven system will wipe the slate clean once and for all. My system doesn't just raise your credit score, it will permanently insulate your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have. Call today and I'll send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system. You can hit the reset button on your credit score and wipe the slate clean. Let me show you how. Call right now to get my free tape. 1-800-400-8498. That's 1-800-400-8498. 1-800-400-8498.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and they're poisoning our children, ladies and gentlemen. They're poisoning the children. If you have not heard Dr. Ayoub's talk, we do have that available. We have my interviews with him, if you'd like it on tape. But if you really, this is an excellent video, very well done in my estimation. And that's Dr. Ayoub's video on the influenza shots that they're giving to our pregnant women, loaded with mercury, and they know there's toxic doses of mercury in it. And the no point would you do more harm to the mind of the child than to give it to the mother during the first trimester. Why would you do something like that? Why, ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with evil people, and some of them wear white coats, and they work at the Centers for Disease Control, and they work at our corporate headquarters, but specifically, this is more than money. One in six American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and they know it's related to mercury. You need to get our 4-tape set on mercury. You need to get our book, Evidence of Harm. And, of course, you need to get the videos we have on mercury, Uninformed Consent, excellent video. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have this. In fact, Dr. David Kennedy has a great new DVD on mercury. We'll be carrying it. I haven't seen it yet, but everything he's ever done in the past has been excellent, and I'm sure this will be excellent as well. So if you want any of these items, the 2 4-tape sets we have on mercury, the 4-tape set we have on autism, the book Evidence of Harm, Dr. Ayoub's excellent VHS, it's a video on the mercury injections or influenza injections that contain mercury, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Understand that they've taken the mercury out of the childhood vaccines that they're using here in America, but then they insist now on giving it to children, the influenza shot, because after all, it's not a childhood vaccine. We're just going to give it to children pre-born and immediately after they're born. Why would they do that when they've acknowledged it's harmful? Because they want to hurt the children. When you understand that, it makes sense they're going to give this to literally hundreds of millions of children throughout the world to destroy their fertility, to destroy their minds. If you haven't seen our material on population control, why, we have a 4-tape set. We have a population control special, and you can get my population control agenda monograph, which is still one of the finest things out there. And then, of course, you can certainly get my talk. It's about 2.5 hours. We gave it for the Prophecy Club, Planned Population Reduction. And certainly, if you want to understand fluoride, you need to get my talk, Hidden Agenda, and you need to get the syllabus with it. And all the scientific papers are there. Many of them are there, the abstracts. And, of course, it gives you the sources where you can get the information. And you go to your doctor and say, why are you trying to hurt people? And the doctor's going to be offended. I would never hurt people. And say, well, then get the information. Get Dr. Ayoub's talk. Get your doctor to start to think and realize that he is being used by evil and wicked people who want to harm the children. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you haven't read the book, Hostage to the Devil, you need to get it and read it, Dr. Malachi Martin's book, and of course get the 4-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and get the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Get the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2 and so many of the other things we have. Go up on our website and look at them. Understanding America is under attack today, not from Osama bin Laden, he's probably been dead for a long period of time, but from right here in America, where very evil men are intentionally hurting children. Their goal is to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave, because they hate freedom, they hate humanity. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. We'll be back here in just a moment with another fascinating program right here at Genesis.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, hopefully we have with us on the line Brian DeCesar. Brian, are you there? Well, I'm going to have to ask my producer to get out here. We're having some difficulty with our phone system for some reason, and I'm not certain. In fact, I'm going to ask my... Oh, wait a minute. Now, let's just see. Maybe we can solve this problem right now. Let's see. No, we've got it solved. Brian, are you there?
Yes, now I'm here. Now that's much better.
All right, fine. Well, Brian works for the Pacifica Foundation, which is a very... a liberal organization. They have radio stations all across the country, and he's in charge of the archives, and I thought we'd talk him today about the archives that they have at Pacifica Foundation, because they've had an opportunity to interview many, many of the very, very liberal people who have very liberal views. And, of course, I think that it's important we look at the overall spectrum of ideas, because, of course, it's so easy to just look at one side. I think we have to look at all sides and try to understand what motivates people, both on the conservative and on the liberal sides of the spectrum. What actually energizes what is the vision of humanists? What is the vision of the socialist? Indeed, what is the vision of the communist who's given his life for an idea of trying to change the world forever? So, with that as the background, why don't you tell us, Brian, a little bit about the archives that you have and why they're important and what is actually there.
Right, and actually what you just said, Dr. Monteith, is the Pacifica mission statement, which was founded in 1949. The Pacifica Archives represents a collection of 50,000 master reel-to-reel tapes documenting 57 years of public listener-supported radio. Pacifica Foundation is the very first listener-sponsored media in the country, dating back to 1949, predating NPR. So these 50,000 tapes that I'm custodian of, and it's a privilege and an honor to be so, documents the latter half of the 20th century from the leftist progressive perspective. You know, it was about dialogue, and you know, following World War II, the founders of Pacifica, you know, this is based on pacifism, not because we're on the Pacific coast, but pacifist ideals. They were Quakers, they were conscientious objectors to World War II, and coming out of that, they got into radio and found that commercial radio wasn't giving the public the information that they needed to understand the war, that the world that they were in. So this dialogue, this radio station in Berkeley, California, that started with artists and journalists, poets, and authors trying to tell our stories is what we now have in the archives. You know, interviews with Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Allen Ginsberg reading Howl on the Air for the very first time in 1956, Fannie Lou Hamer, one of the great civil rights workers, Jim Hightower from Texas, Langston Hughes and James Baldwin and Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and you know, from the icons of the civil rights movement and social movements of the 20th century, all the way down to the voice of the voiceless. And we must not forget that in this land of public media, we offer, you know, cultural events and civic events and actuality of protest rallies that give voice to the voiceless that don't have a voice in mainstream commercial media.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment or two with Brian DeCesar of the Pacifica Foundation, a very liberal radio network. Has stations? How many stations do you have across America?
We have 5 stations that we own, but we also have 100 affiliate stations across the country.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Brian as we discuss what they have in their archives and why it might be interested in hearing some of the things that they have. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Brian DeShazor. He's with the Pacific Radio Archives. Now, for those of you who do not know the Pacifica, a radio network, they have a number of radio stations which are listener-supported, and then, of course, they have a number of affiliates across the country, and they approach things from a very liberal point of view. And they've had, throughout the years, people that many conservatives would violently disagree with. But they have been a voice, and many people have listened to them and gotten their ideas from Pacific Radio. And so I think it behooves us to understand what motivates people, you know, on the other side of this political spectrum. And, of course, many of these people opposed the Second World War. They opposed the Vietnam War, and I think with much good justification, as I began to realize we never went there to win the war, we just went there to fight a war, and I'm sure that many of your listeners oppose the war in Iraq today that we're not trying to win, don't they?
Absolutely. I think a major part of what defines Pacifica, you know, over the past 57 years has been its response and dialogue about the wars that are currently going on. And so as we see what happened in Vietnam, we see the relevance in these recordings that talk to the current issue in Iraq. And, you know, the Pacifica Network does broadcast protest rallies, anti-war marches, peace rallies currently, as no one else does.
Well, now, what is the relationship to the Ford Foundation and the MacArthur Foundation, the Pew Foundation? Do they help to fund this at the present time?
Right. The Ford Foundation actually goes back to the beginning of Pacifica's history. I think about 5 years into this experiment of listener-sponsored radio, there was still only one station in Berkeley, California, and it went belly up. You know, they didn't have enough money, and the Ford Foundation came in and gave them a grant to restart the experiment. And currently the Ford Foundation is funding the Pacifica Radio Archives with a preservation grant to preserve protest, rally, and demonstration recordings from the early 50s on. So in the coming months, we'll actually have audio and materials available on our website through that grant, so that some of these messages and the emotions and the speeches by people in, let's say, a feminist march from 1952, certainly predating the modern feminist movement, but there it is. You know, now we get to say, this is what it was, these are the women that were there, and this is what they were trying to achieve. And 25 years later, another try at it, you know, another stab.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Brian DeShazor. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest today. He's coming from the Pacifica Radio Archives, who works with the Pacifica Foundation. We were just talking about the funding of Pacifica. And this is, of course, what many people who are conservative really don't understand. And that is that the Ford Foundation has funded many of the activities, not only of the conservatives, but of the liberals as well. And, of course, what people do not understand is that some of these people fund the right, the left, the Republicans, the Democrats, of course, not the Ford Foundation. They can't fund political parties, but they fund the people who make the political parties work. And there's this whole idea of the dichotomy. So we can divide America, so we can have one group on the left, one group on the right, one group that's conservative, one group that's liberal. But, of course, we never talk often about the real issues. That's the problem. Does Ford Foundation actually contribute to the running of Pacifica as well as funding the archives?
No. Actually, Pacifica still is in the land of, you know, absolutely no underwriting. They do get CPB grant money, but other than that, it's fully sponsored by our listeners.
Now, I'm sorry, what is the source of money we're talking about?
The source of money for the Pacifica Foundation operations and to keep the stations alive, that comes directly from the listeners. We don't take underwriting or grants from institutions. So the Ford Foundation in funding the archives preservation was sort of separate. It didn't sort of like get into the land of broadcasting.
Well, what about initially? Didn't you say that initially?
I think it was in 1952 when they gave the Pacifica Foundation a grant to restart their operations. But, you know, that was some 50 years ago.
All right, fine. So Pacific has continued being a voice of the liberal left throughout the Bay Area for many, many years. And do you carry any middle of the road or conservative programming? Is it all left wing programming?
You know, as the archives and sort of analyzing the broadcast history, There were times early on that there were right-wing conservatives on, in fact, it was before right-wing was even termed a coined a phrase, but we did have some right-wing conservatives on the air on their own shows, so it was sort of juxtaposed with leftist views and leftist programs, but in the current era, that has sort of disappeared off of Pacifica's airwaves. The board of, you know, the foundation and the board of directors and the managers really seen, because there's such a, the landscape in media is so overrun by right-wing conservative messages, they felt that the balance of reporting for Pacifica was to go further to the left and further progressive and further liberal.
And of course, then you were very, very much instrumental in supporting Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
Have they done anything to cover his assassination and the fact that many people feel that he was actually assassinated by elements within our government?
Yes, I think, you know, I think probably at the decade following his assassination, Pacifica reporters did do some in-depth investigation, and there are a couple documentaries based on various conspiracy theories. But as we know, you know, nothing's really been solved yet. And unfortunately, that subject really has sort of lost favor with journalists and reporters.
And that's really such a shame, because eventually, just a very few years ago, there was actually a trial where the King family actually brought charges against the government and their complicity in it, and the final decision of the trial was the government was 70% responsible, that James Earl Ray had not been the man who pulled the trigger, and totally blacked out by both the right and the left. And I'm so amazed that at least Pacifica didn't carry that story. Of course, there's a book came out of that by William Pepper going into the death of Martin Luther King and the fact that he was silenced because, of course, he was coming out against the Vietnam War at the time when the administration wanted to continue the war.
Right. In fact, I can even give you even more information and evidence to that statement. After Mrs. King passed away this year, we went into our archives and looked for all the tapes we had of Mrs. King for a memorial program. And we found a program that was unidentified, and in the audio, it's a peace rally, the 27th peace rally, April 1968 in New York City. April 1968 is the month Dr. King was assassinated. So this event, this recording, takes place 3 weeks after Dr. King's assassination. Mrs. King substitutes for Dr. King's schedule at this peace rally in New York City, and she, as she says in the recording, she took the notes out of Dr. King's jacket that he was assassinated in, took it out of his dead pocket, as she says, and the notes are the Ten Commandments against the Vietnam War, ending with Thou Shalt Not Kill. That recording can certainly lead more people to think that what he had in his pocket was the reason why he was assassinated. Who did it is another tale.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, the King family was very, very concerned. They never believed the official government story. And at the trial there, of course, but totally blacked out. I don't think the average person has ever heard of it, but they can go up on the Internet and type in Martin Luther King and Pepper, I believe it's. Pepper was the attorney who carried the case for the King family. And not one word in the regular media. Nobody from the regular media was allowed to attend those trials. And sometime I'm going to have to get Mr. Pepper onto our program to discuss it. But certainly Colonel Marvin, who we've had on many times, was there and tells an amazing story of what he personally knew and been told by people involved in the Special Forces team that was involved with the murder of Martin Luther King. Well, of course, this is the sort of thing that we really need to have. We really need to have sources of getting information out to both the right and the left. Do you get a good response from your listeners?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are millions of Pacifica listeners, but I think that I can sort of attest to the archives aspect in this collection that we're trying to preserve. That really, Dr. Monteith, really speaks beyond Pacifica's broadcast mission. You know, what we've sort of been able to amass. You know, the people like Dr. King and Malcolm X and Paul Robeson and James Baldwin and Langston Hughes, you know, from the Civil Rights Movement era, the only place that they had to go was public free speech radio, which was Pacifica at the time. So these recordings really sort of serve our national cultural heritage just beyond just the liberal media, because this really is those people trying to understand the world that they live in, and what we're trying to do now is the same thing. So when I hear James Baldwin speak about the civil rights movement, myself as a, you know, as a white male, understand a great deal more about the times, and also can sort of project of what's going on now.
And of course, Malcolm X was really one of the fascinating individuals who started out as a black militant, and of course, eventually realized, of course, he was being manipulated by this organization, the sect he belonged to. And when he spoke out and pointed out that the Elijah Muhammad, who ran this black extremist organization and was insisting so much on morality, was himself a lecherous old man who was seducing all sorts of women and then thwarting them out of the organization. And when he spoke out about it, why, of course, he signed his own death warrant. And he knew that. But he believed enough in the cause of perhaps, you know, coming together as black and white, that this was not, racism was not going to be a solution to the problems we had. And he paid for that with his life.
Right. The Pacifica Archives, we do have, you know, an extensive collection of Malcolm X speeches because Pacifica covered him in the field. You know, portable recorders were available at the time, and Pacifica volunteers took those portable recorders to, you know, the fields, to the parks, to the public spaces, and recorded speeches by Malcolm X. We have the very last speech that Malcolm X gave before his assassination.
Now, are those available? Are there any way that people can get access to that? And are they available to be used on programs such as mine?
Yes, they are. In fact, the Pacifica Radio Archives website, pacificaradioarchives.org, you can make a pledge to our efforts for preservation, and you can receive a 6-CD set of Malcolm X speeches, including John Henrik Clark, an African-American scholar who spoke about Malcolm X late in his life, which is an extraordinary recording in and of itself. So the Pacifica audience has had a relationship with these recordings for many years, them being broadcast and used during fundraising broadcasts for Pacifica. And I know it's really our mission in the archives to make them accessible and listenable to a wider audience so that they can understand Malcolm X, you know, the human being, and not just Malcolm X, the black icon.
All right, fine. But can those, if you do actually get these CDs, or can they be used, you know, on the radio?
I think we would have to talk about how they would be used and, you know, give permission. It really sort of depends because there's so many different types of licensing and permissions. But I'd be glad to work with you and make them available to your audience.
Sure. All right, fine. I think it might be fascinating to listen to a voice from the past from a man who really started out really very much associated with a man named Elijah Muhammad, who put together, and I've even forgotten the name of the organization, but it was really a very radical racist organization. And then, of course, the sudden disillusionment with what he, everything he had believed in and his willingness to take on a position of leadership, a fascinating story about a fascinating man. And I think the autobiography of Malcolm X is certainly a book well worth all reading from a historical point of view. And everything is still being done today to create racial hatred in America. But, of course, that's an entirely different story. One of these days we'll tell you the true story of O.J. Simpson and who really killed Nicole, which, of course, most people have never heard. Well, anyway, who are some of the other people that you have there in your archives?
Well, we have, you know, Muhammad Ali, as you spoke. You know, we have a recording of Muhammad Ali in 1968 speaking to a UCLA students about the Vietnam War. We have Dorothy Dandridge, the only time that she was ever recorded outside of her job as an actress. She was at a freedom rally with Dr. King and Ralph Abernathy and a bunch of Hollywood Hollywood types, Joanne Woodward, Paul Newman. And then Dorothy Dandridge spoke for the civil rights movement. We have a rare recording of Betty Davis, of course, you know, at a San Francisco film festival. J. Krishnamurti, another religious icon.
Now, I mean, Krishnamurti, because she was the one who was come forward and declare himself to be the Christ back in the 20s or 30s, and I guess he got a different message and he withdrew from his appointment. But he was the person who was actually being pushed by Alice Bailey and the Basantes to become the new world leader. Does he discuss that at all?
Yes, he does. You know, he does talk about his enlightenment of dismissing all organized religion. In fact, there's a recording of him, having to fearfully tell the Dalai Lama that he did not believe Buddhism or other religion.
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking with Brian DeCesar, and he was talking about, of course, some of the recordings they have. Now, for those of you who do not know who Krishnamurti is, Krishnamurti was he Indian, or
he was from India. Uh-huh.
And, of course, he had been selected by a very powerful group here in America that ties into what is today the Lucis Trust, and he was to become the world leader. And he was going to be brought to America, and he was going to become this sort of, well, of course, to the Christian, the Messiah, to the Indian, the Maitreya, to the Muslim, the Imam Mahdi. He would become this personification of the leader of all religions, and with great fanfare, he was brought here, and he declined the offer. And so, what did you really learn from listening to Krishnamurti?
Well, actually, no, it's odd that you say that, because we do have a weekly radio series called From the Vault, fromthevaultradio.org. You can actually listen and podcast or stream an entire program on Jay Krishnamurti. And what we did, Dr. Monteith, was get two of our volunteers in the archive, an elderly woman and a young man, to listen to the recordings and give us their impressions of what they learned from it. So I'm really sort of like pleased to say that they had two different takes on the speeches of this dismissing religion and being, you know, aware, self-aware. I think he was sort of talking about self-awareness and the internal individual is your religion. Where, you know, as one volunteer said, you know, I like that idea, I'm not into religion, I want to be myself. And then the other volunteer really sort of saying, well, if that's his argument, then how can we dismiss the concept of love, you know, how can we accept love, or how, so, you know, they went into some very deep thought about their personal relationship with their personal religion based on the recordings of Jay Krishnamurti. So ultimately, I think what I learned is that his message is so deep that it speaks 40 years later to two volunteers that are in our room completely, and they get something different out of it. It makes them think, it provokes thought and emotion about the subject.
Now, right now, of course, you were mentioning that he had actually gone to the Dalai Lama and told him he didn't agree with his views.
Right. He was very close with the Dalai Lama during his time as, you know, the religious icon. And in the program called Religion and Meditation, he talks about the difficulty in changing his philosophy and going to his religious friends, including, you know, the highest order of the High Holiness, Dalai Lama, and having to explain to him why he dismissed the whole concept of religion. So it's a very interesting recording to sort of hear him in his own words how that change happened.
Well, now, how would people find out really what you have in the archives? Are they listed? Are they cataloged? Are they available individually? Are they available on audio tape? Are they available on CD?
We have about 2,000 that are available on CD. You know, I think the job and our efforts really are to raise enough money to transfer them from reel-to-reel tape masters to digital audio so that we can listen to it and restore it and play with it and make it more accessible. So right now you can go into our website, pacificaradioarchives.org, and do a basic search and really look at everything we have in the collection by a keyword search. And you can also look at our online store to see what's available and, you know, browse by subject.
All right, I understand that you have Aldous Huxley there.
Yes, in fact, that's one of the oldest recordings we have in the archive, 1952, about 3 years after public media started. They recorded a 10 lecture series by Aldous Huxley.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Brian is saying that they have there a 10-lecture series by Aldous Huxley recorded about 1952. Now, 1952 was about the time that, I graduated from medical school long, long time ago, 54 years ago. But Aldous Huxley, of course, is best known for his novel, The Brave New World.
Right.
Where he laid out, of course, what the future holds for us if we continue going the same direction we were going. Aldous Huxley, his brother Julian Huxley, was the first the first leader of UNESCO. I forgot what they called him. I went on to call him Surgeon General, but I know that's not the proper term. But both Aldous and Julian were humanists who were looking for man's ability to change the world. What do you learn from Aldous Huxley?
Well, you know, see, I have to correct myself. These are the Aldous Huxley lectures are from 1959 when he was a visiting professor at UC California, Santa Barbara. And it really is sort of like that discussion. You know, he really does lecture about the individuals and industrial society, the nature of human responsibility, the physical and psychological self, and the language of human behavior, art and symbols, self-fulfillment. So really, this is discussion to provoke thought about how we see the human being, how we see human potentialities, the possibilities for peace and the possibilities. So again, this is sort of 1959, and we're still in the Cold War, and this is a man that comes to Free Speech Radio and gives lectures about a new way of thinking.
Well, of course.
So it's, you know, it's sort of like just sort of learning, you know, again, you said Brave New World is a novel we, you know, might have read in high school, but have we ever actually heard the man who wrote it speak about what he believed and what he thought?
What did he believe? What did he think?
That I don't feel confident enough to really expound on, because there's so much in the archives that I've learned, but it's very difficult to sort of isolate that.
Well, of course, he was one of the signers of the Humanist Manifesto, so if you don't have a copy of the Humanist Manifesto out there in the audience, we do offer that. And it's important that you understand there are people who have an entirely different worldview. And, of course, they approach the world as, how can man bring about a better world? And, of course, those of us who believe, in the Bible, believe that man is not going to bring about a better world. A man keeps trying and he keeps failing down through the years. He always has, and we believe he always will. But Aldous Huxley was one of the intellectuals who believed that man, if we could just harness his intelligence, could create a better society. Well, we look around and see what a great society we have today, and do we want to continue down the same road where we began, of course, when we turned our backs on our traditions and began to embrace man's effort to bring about a utopia. Well, our guest is Brian DeCesar. We're talking about the Pacific Radio Archives. And if you would like to give us a call, I have a question for Brian. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. I understand you even have interviews with Eleanor Roosevelt.
Right. This wasn't necessarily an interview, but it was a speech that she had given about the creation of the United Nations. A couple of years ago, we pulled that out and pulled out, an Abbie Hoffman recording from the late 60s during the Vietnam War. And we played both clips for Noam Chomsky, the linguist from MIT, and sort of asked his impressions about hearing Eleanor Roosevelt and Abbie Hoffman together, and was sort of able to make, you know, an intellectual connection between what her vision and why the United Nations was set up and Abbie Hoffman's vision, if you will, and, you know, him trying to levitate the Pentagon, in the 1969.
Trying to levitate in the Pentagon, you said?
Yes, there was sort of like this, I always call it performance art today, but, you know, in the 60s during the Vietnam War, Abbie Hoffman tried to levitate or raise the Pentagon, you know, by, you know, people holding hands. You know,
it was a crazy idea,
but I think, you know, his point was of trying to get the Pentagon off the ground.
Well, of course, there are people who really believe they can tap into this other dimension and, of course, really can accomplish these things. And the frightening thing is, there are people who can, unfortunately, or at least I think we have to deal with the reality that there is another dimension. There is a spiritual dimension to literally everything going on in the world today. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest this afternoon. We have Mike calling in, and if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But you have to understand how other people think. Abbie Hoffman was going to have people joining hands and levitate the Pentagon. We may think that's really very, very foolish. But there really are people that, of course, do have supernatural power. Fortunately, Abbie Hoffman, I guess, really didn't have that power. He never was able to get the Pentagon up in the air there. But we have to understand we're fighting a spiritual battle on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now we have Mike calling in. Hi, Mike from Santa Cruz. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. This is a great show today. I just love it. And
it's a little different, but that's all right. I'm enjoying Brian and enjoying, because I think we have to understand how everybody thinks if we want to be effective in this this battle we're involved in. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, we kind of all have to join hands. Now, my question is about the way the left regards the media as being so right-wing controlled, and conversely, the right has a huge idea of the media being left-wing controlled. Let me just add that I'm 56, and I spent the first half of my adult life radical left, counterculture from the 60s, drug culture, guru scene, you name it. And to me, a light came on halfway through, and now you would call me very right, but I wouldn't, given what the right wing is today. But when the left talks about the media being very right-wing controlled, I always want to know exactly what are they referring to, and then conversely, when the right says that the left is controlling the media, I want to know exactly what they're saying. I believe now that the aristocracy is very clever at putting on two faces, a left and a right face, and a few other oddball faces to filter down to the rest of the people. And so they have different ways of making themselves appear in different colors.
All right, fine. Well, let's get Brian's response. Mike is saying that the left thinks that the media is right-wing controlled. The right-wing thinks that the media is left-wing controlled. How would you respond to that?
I think that, you know, you're probably right in your assessment that each side thinks the other side is the one with the power. But I think, you know, in evidence, you know, as my position in the archives and looking at the collection that we have, almost, you know, when I came into the archives, let's say 10 years ago, I came from Virginia. I didn't know anything about leftist progressive thought. It's not on the media. You watch the Today Show, you watch Good Morning America, you watch the evening news. You will not find mention of Noam Chomsky. You will never hear Noam Chomsky speak. You will never hear Helen Caldicott speak. You will never hear Howard Zinn speak. You will never hear Malcolm X speak when he was alive. You would have never heard Fannie Lou Hamer speak when she was alive. All of the people that I have learned from of the leftist thought, progressive thought, in the Pacifica archives exists nowhere else, sir. So when I can say that I feel, personally, that the mainstream media is shifted to the right, is because that they do not allow voices that speak from the progressive perspective
hold on the air. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just discussing this idea of left and right, and Mike had called, Mike from Santa Cruz had called in and said, you know, the people on the right think that the media is controlled by the left, the people on the left think the media is controlled by the right, and Brian was saying, well, of course, the thing is that in the evening news on Oprah and all Donahue, and of course Donahue's fortunately no longer with us, but so many of the major programs that people hear, you'll never hear people like Noam Chomsky being interviewed. You'll never hear people who really have this very leftist point of view appearing. Would that be a fair statement, Brian?
I have not yet found evidence of Mr. Chomsky on any mainstream media news program where he actually gets to speak as himself freely.
All right,
plenty of time they're invited, but they're usually cut off by you know, the pundit or the, you know, the host. They usually don't really get to speak. They're usually attacked.
All right, fine. And so you, for those of you who don't know Noam Chomsky, he is you might call him a very left-wing individual who talks extensively about what's going on in the world from a philosophical point of view. Of course, many of us think that he never talks about what the real issues are, in other words, the issues that we might agree with him on, but he never mentions them. On the other hand, he is one of the official spokesmen for the extreme, let's call it progressive movement today. And there would be other people like Amy Goodman, who certainly is doing a very similar thing. She appears regularly on Pacifica, but you're not going to hear her on Oprah or the others. Anything else you'd like to say, Mike?
Well, no, I'd just like to say Brian makes his point very well, and points well taken. I think in Chomsky's case, for example, he hits really hard on the aristocracy with hard information that they don't want out, and so they don't let him out. But that's the aristocracy, and not I wouldn't call it the right wing controlling him out of business.
All right, fine.
Just remember that the aristocracy is the ones that are paying, that own the media, that owns the media.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So they all live in the same house.
All right, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. And, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for Brian, why he comes from the aggressive point of view, but I think we need to talk to him and we need to understand what he believes because he's very, very sincere. And unfortunately, looking back on the Vietnam War, they were absolutely right during the Vietnam War. It took me, a number of years to realize that we never went to Vietnam to fight communism. The whole idea that we were over there, if we didn't defeat communism in Vietnam, why they were going to take Laos and Cambodia and Malaysia and New Guinea and Australia and New Zealand, and then we were going to be facing them in San Francisco. Oh, we had to fight them over there. And, of course, we never really tried to win the war. If anybody's analyzed it, realizes that we never tried to win the war. If you've read the rules of engagement, which we have, which is published in the Congressional Record, our men were not allowed to win. I personally talked to both the ambassador to Laos, William H. Sullivan, and to a four-star Marine general, General Lewis Walt. Both of them told me we could have won in 2 months. We were never to be allowed to do that. So things are never what they appear to be. Well, Brian, certainly, I'm sure many of those recordings you have going back to Vietnam are fascinating, aren't they?
Yes, and so rare, too. We have the only unedited version of Senator John Kerry testifying before the House Committee on... I forget the committee, but it was the one where he testified that, the veterans that were coming back from Vietnam were saying, stop. Stop this mess. Stop the business. He was reporting the Winter Soldier investigations. So what we found when Senator Kerry was running for president, we found this recording, and MSNBC came to us because they had video footage, but it had been edited. All the mainstream media, this is actually a good point for Mike, that all the archives on NBC, CBS, wherever they had footage of this testimony, all of it had been edited. When every time he said soldiers were chopping off heads and were raping women, were burning villages, and all the derogatory remarks that came out of that investigation, all of that was edited. So we at Pacifica have the only unedited copy of that in existence.
All right, well, let's go to Mike here in Arizona. And, of course, I think it's a generalization. I think most of our soldiers did a good job, but there will always be exceptions. And, of course, the trouble is that sometimes when you give the impression that they're all doing it, it's like, of course, all Catholics are involved in a conspiracy or all Jews are involved in a conspiracy. Most of our soldiers were very, very, really dedicated. They thought they were over there fighting communism. They did their best, but there were certainly some bad apples, and certainly so much of what you're really describing was the CIA part of the war, and what most people don't understand is the CIA ran their own war over there, and that was where a lot of these real problems came in.
Right, I apologize to our soldiers who really are sacrificing and doing the job that was put forward to them, let me just say, this was sort of, because the recording is unedited, it allowed us to understand what he was really saying. The edited version gives us not the truth. It's not a matter of listening to the thing and disagreeing or agreeing. It was better to try to understand what they were trying to say.
All right, fine. I think that might be fascinating to hear. Well, anyway, we've got Mike calling in from Arizona. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had two questions, actually. First, I didn't hear where the seed money came for the Pacifica Foundation?
Initially, of course, it was private, and then, of course, the Ford Foundation came in and gave seed money, but that was many years ago. Apparently, the Ford Foundation is not funding them at the present time, although they are helping to fund the archive project that Brian is involved in.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you anticipate transferring those tapes to something like an MP3 format that people could listen to over the computer?
Right. We do have some audio available on our website now in MP3 format. You can stream and podcast some, and it's audio.pacificaradioarchives.org. You can see a list of materials that are available for streaming. So, yes, our preservation and access project is transferring the media from that reel-to-reel tape, analog tape, that's deteriorating, to digital media in various forms.
Could you say that website again, please?
If you go to pacificaradioarchives.org,
okay.
You can find some various audio, but if you do audio, no www, just audio.pacificaradioarchives.org, that's our audio page.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
You're okay, welcome. Fine. Anybody else out there? Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And one of the big problems of today is that people do not understand the past. And, you know, it's been said that, you know, if you don't, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. It's a trite statement, but it's really so very, very true. We have to search for the truth, for as Daniel Webster has said, there is nothing so powerful as truth.
Or Thomas Jefferson, who said, an informed public will make the right decision.
Right. And, of course, what Daniel Webster said was, you know, there's nothing so powerful as truth and often nothing so strange. I thought that. And I think that this really is so true. It was Lord Byron who said, you know, truth is always strange, stranger than fiction. And I really believe so. We need to do our research. We need to. And as you know, I for our listeners out there, I spent a lot of time involved in books. We have tens of thousands of books in our library. But certainly if you can get your hands on some of the original conversations, maybe these are not in book form, but they're the feelings, the beliefs of people who spoke out in the past. Whether we agree with them or not isn't important. We need to know what they said, and perhaps we might even find some truth there. Perhaps we'd find a great deal of truth there by people who've been vilified by the conservatives and called communists, when many times, as during the First World War, there were people who just said, we shouldn't be in World War One. We had no business going overseas to fight, people like Eugene Debs. And he was absolutely right. He went to prison because he said the war is wrong, and we had no business going into the First World War. And the same thing was true with World War II. We were manipulated into it, and what most people do not understand is that during the Second World War, many of America's largest corporations were building the war material in Germany and making a profit. The war material that was used to transport the German soldiers to Normandy, where they could kill American soldiers. But we never talk about what is talked about in a book called by Charles Hingham, and it goes into the background of this whole Trading with the Enemy is the title of the book by Charles Hingham. And I think everybody needs to understand that Hingham was talking about during the Second World War, American corporations and American banks were financing Adolf Hitler. But we can't talk about that today, because of course it might change the entire thrust of what we have come to believe. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Our guest is Brian DeCesar, and are you the official custodian of the radio archives?
Yes, I'm the archives director.
All right, fine. How many people do you have working with you?
We have seven staff, and we have probably about 10 volunteers that come in one or two times a week, help us with transfer, help us with identifying tapes for our series from the vault, from thevaultradio.org. You can look at a list of our programs. And even some of your audience members can help and volunteer in helping us shape our show and look for history in our archives to listen to again.
All right. Now, who are some of the other people that you have that you think people might find fascinating or want to listen to?
Well, I think that, you know, it really is sort of like, you name it, we have it. I've heard that story, but it's so often the case that if a researcher, a scholar, an author, a student, you know, high school, anybody doing a dissertation or a paper on a subject, we usually find something on that subject in our archives. So let's say if you're looking at religion, you know, we have everybody from, you know, Jay Krishnamurti, as we spoke before, Alan Watts, who was the American who brought Eastern philosophy to the United States in the 50s. He had a regular show on Pacifica. So we have amazing talks about Buddhism and Eastern philosophy, all the way to Madeline Murray O'Hare, the infamous atheist who spoke against religion. So we have if you're in religion, we have the spectrum of dialogue about religion. If you're into the military and war and peace, we have everything spectrum from the peacemakers to reporting of the war, which you would actually sort of learn the education of what the Vietnam War, how was it reported on by this particular foundation and this radio network? You know, we know what the books say about Vietnam, but what did the people say about Vietnam? We have it here. So it's an extraordinary thing that, you know, we're discovering new stuff every single day.
And do you get into the Korean War at all? Did you get into the fall of China? Do you get into the time of McCarthyism?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. HUAC. The McCarthyism is a huge topic for, you know, the left, as the left was being attacked. So the House of American Activities Committee, we have the actual testimony by the playwright Bertolt Brecht. We have Paul Robeson's testimony. We have Lillian Hellman, the playwright who wrote The Little Foxes, reading her letter to HUAC after being called. We have the Hollywood Ten, who were blacklisted, Zero Mostel. We have recordings of talking about HUAC and their life.
And I think it's really so important to understand that, Eric, certainly. The people who were communists, who were writers there, they all got jobs doing other things, but the people who spoke out against them and exposed the communist influence were blacklisted, many of them forever. And that's, of course, a part of the story that we never hear about. But, of course, a lot of people embraced communism because they saw the inadequacies of our society and they saw the corruption in our society, and they believed a false lie that, of course, if they just embraced communism, this was going to solve all the problems of society. And, of course, it really wasn't, because what they were embracing was something even far more sinister than what they saw. But what they did not understand is who would fund the communist movement from its beginning. And that's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and so many of the things that we, of course, cover here in Radio Liberty, and we provide the documentation on, gives you an entirely different perspective, a perspective that most members of the Communist Party would never have known, or certainly never would have suggested. So, anyway, these were an entirely different time, an entirely different era of our country, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think as I was talking, you know, we've talked a lot about males for some reason. I don't know why everything I list has been very male-oriented. But, you know, a lot of the women's history, women in history, from the suffragist movement through the feminist movement through, you know, the gay and lesbian movement, you know, women have had their place in Pacifica. I think in the early 70s, probably in the Vietnam War era, there was an actual women's collective created at Pacifica, so that the programming that was created for women's programming was done by women. So topics from, you know, spousal abuse and domestic violence to breast cancer and, you know, everything that comes under, you know, that heading of how women view the world is here in the archive. So if somebody's into trying to figure out where the woman, you know, where women fit in this thing of war and peace, you know, the talks are here in the archive. So there's so much, Dr. Stan, that I really, it's very difficult for me to choose one to speak about because there's so many.
All right, and of course, did you interview a lot of the political leaders of those eras in the past?
All right, they certainly covered the public hearings. So, you know, whatever, whoever was holding public office, you know, those recordings were sort of free to the public. You know, they're in public domain. So, you know, often we have Robert Kennedy and John F. Kennedy before, you know, when he was still a senator. We have, you know, Jerry Brown, you know, early from the, you know, actually when he was part of the Chicago 8 trial. And we have, you know, covering the Chicago Democratic Convention. I think we did a 2-hour documentary on the history of the presidential party conventions, going all the way back to the beginning of recorded sound. I think 1934 was the very first convention that was broadcast. And we had audio from every single convention from each party, Republican, Democrat, and we had audio from conventions from the Communist Party, the Libertarian Party, and Independent parties. So as we sort of gathered, trying to tell the story, why did we go to these presidential conventions? What was the point in the first place? And then how have we gone from there, that original intent, to inform the public to what is now basically a done deal and all we do is party and watch the balloons fall? So it was an incredible archaeological dig to find all the audio, including there was a playwright that spoke as a delegate that was really amazing. I can't think of her name, so forget it.
I can't forget it because I don't even know who you're talking about. But anyway, of course, it is fascinating to go into the back. background of so much of what's going on today, because only by delving into the background and trying to analyze what's happened in the past can we really begin putting things into their perspective today, because there's nothing new. I mean, we look at Iraq and we hear all about the things that are going on in Baghdad, but if you understand Vietnam, if you understand why we did not try to win in Vietnam, you can understand why we're not really trying to win over in Iraq. Yes, our men are fighting and dying. Yes, the officers there are doing the best job that they possibly can. But, of course, who is funding, of course, this whole movement on the other side? Who's funding the Taliban, who are, of course, coming from Pakistan down into Afghanistan and killing American soldiers and NATO soldiers and then fading back into Pakistan? Where is Pakistan getting their money? Why, ladies and gentlemen, it's your tax money. In a similar manner, who was funding the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War? Well, that's another story. But if you get our material on Vietnam, you'll find that nothing you've been told is really accurate. Well, Brian, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us. What thought would you like to leave with our listeners today?
I think I'd like to leave you with the fact that I've been invited recently to testify before the Library of Congress Recorded Sound Board. The Act of Congress a couple years ago providing money to study the state of preservation of sound in the United States. Our collection has been noted by the Library of Congress as significant of its content, and also noting our efforts recently over the past 5 years to do preservation in our methodology and standards. So it's our opportunity for your listeners and our Pacifica listeners to send a message to the Library of Congress to note that these recordings that we're trying to preserve is worthy of attention and noted and defined as a national treasure. And we invite people to listen to our broadcast to raise funds on November 28th and 29th. You can stream on PacificaRadioArchives.org and learn more about that broadcast and how you can individually help us send a message to the Library of Congress to note how important recorded sound of the spoken word and civic events is in our country today.
All right, fine. Well, I think that certainly what you're doing sounds like it would be rather exciting. And of course, do you have any training specifically in this, or is this just a sort of a labor of love?
It's a total labor of love. I'm not a master's of library science. I'm not even a student of library science. I've learned my trade here in the archives. Luckily, because I've had a lot of consultation with experts and through grants, we've been able to learn a great deal. Now we are sort of at the level where we're recognized by the Library of Congress to give them information to use to help reauthorize those funds to save the America's treasures.
Well, of course, is this one of the purposes of the Ford Foundation funding your efforts?
Yes. Again, they gave us $25,000 to do a project defining what our protest rally recordings are. You know, where was Pacifica during all these times of protests and rallies and demonstrations, again, because they note that it isn't documented anywhere else.
All right, fine. And, of course, I think that it's so important to understand really what is happening and what has happened in the past, when many times you have, for instance, in the Vietnam War era, where you had your pro-war people and then you had your anti-war people, and many times the anti-war people were actually being funded by the same people who were pushing the war. You always want a controlled opposition. It's one of the oldest tricks in the world. There's a wonderful quotation in Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed by a Member of the SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, the radical organization opposing the war, telling about how they were being funded by Exxon, by Standard Oil Interest. We're out of time, Brian. Thanks very much.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And also, can I give that phone number out? 800.
Hold up. Well, Brian, why don't you get that telephone number out one more time?
Right, 800-735-0230. You can call our offices, and we'd be glad to help you with any research questions or questions about our collection.
Why don't you give that number one more time?
1-800-735-0230. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
Thank you so very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed our program here. It's a little different, but I think Brian's a very sincere person, and I think that the information they have is very important. And to understand Vietnam, you have to understand that it was during that period of time that during the Vietnam War, when the United States financiers and government financed the building of the Kama River plant, the largest truck building plant anywhere in the world. And then, of course, we provided the technology and the machinery, and we financed it so that then they could give those trucks, the Russians could give the trucks to North Vietnam to transport the weapons down the Ho Chi Minh Trail that were used to kill our boys. Why would they do that? Why, very simply, the North Vietnamese couldn't have kept the war going for 10 long years. Russia didn't have the money. Communism is not an efficient system. If you go into the background of the funding of communism, you'll find it's been funded by the West since its inception. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Get Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Get, and we do not carry it, but of course we do carry the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. Get my interview with Professor Sutton. But the book that was published by the Hoover Institute, Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, you may have to get second-hand copies. But you'll find out, of course, that all of Russia's technology was funded by the West. Why? Because you needed an enemy. And if you didn't have one, you created it. Just like today, we have a war on terrorism and rallies everyone behind the government. In Vietnam, it was the communists we were fighting. And all the time, we were providing massive amounts of money to Russia, and they were providing the weapons to the North Vietnamese, and the MiG fighters and the anti-aircraft batteries that were shooting down our planes, of course, they were being funded by the United States and by American corporations. And after the war, a great deal of that money was actually forgiven. After all, we couldn't hold them to pay back those debts. They didn't have the money. You need to get, of course, my four-tape set on Vietnam or a Vietnam special. You need to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And I hope that you will challenge everything I say. I hope you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Get our four-tape set on Vietnam. Get our Vietnam special. Learn about the boys we abandoned, the men we left behind. Our four-tape set, One Man Returned. And, of course, we hope that you'll certainly go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and begin to learn about the spiritual forces that energize this whole incredible movement towards a one-world order and a new world religion. Because, you see, behind all of this is this age-old struggle to establish the Novo Ordo Seclorum. You'll find on the back of your dollar bill beneath the occult pyramid capped by the occult all-seeing eye of Lucifer. That's what it's about. You need to get the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. You need to get the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You need to get the Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and perhaps order the three-tape set on the occult hierarchy. There really is an occult hierarchy. You can go on the Internet and Google in occult hierarchy. You'll actually see articles there written by people who are associated with these people. These people who bridge the dimensions between the dimension we live in and the other dimension. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you again, once again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News. On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shull. Democrats are one step away from taking control of the Senate. Jerry Boatlander is on Capitol Hill.
With challenger John Tester defeating Senator Conrad Burns in Montana, Democrats now have 50 seats in the Senate, with only Virginia still undecided. Democrat Jim Webb leads Senator George Allen by about 7,000 votes. Senator Charles Schumer, who led the Democratic Senate push, says Allen should decide against a recount, saying it would be futile.
Do the right and gentlemanly thing to do and just declare Jim Webb the winner now.
But Allen's team says it will wait for a full review of the vote. Jerry Boatlander, Capitol Hill.
Reaction to word that Defense Secretary Rumsfeld is stepping down continues to pour in. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice praises Rumsfeld's service to the country. House Majority